Blog Talk Radio.
BAMS Radio. BAMS Radio. The only station on the planet to give you in-depth insight to Bama football.
AG, Blip, and the Bird.
Bring the lumber.
Welcome to BAMS Radio. It is the Howl of the Moon edition on this Harvest Moon Wednesday night. I guess the segue between the Texas A&M game and the upcoming headbutting that we have with the Colorado State Rams. Well, we have got an illustrious crew to talk Alabama football with you this evening. In Mobile, Alabama, we've got Rock Watts. Rock, how are you tonight?
Pretty good. Frantically studying film in the back, so.
There you go. And we have got the king of all recruiters, Kerry Clark. Kerry, this evening, how are you?
More blessed than I deserve to be.
Absolutely. And in studio, we have the illustrious legend. Legend, brother, how you doing? You got to unmute.
Brother, I am doing good. I'm still just on cloud nine from the amazing game on Saturday.
And it was definitely an amazing game. I had the pleasure of attending the game in person. And just for fans that didn't go, it was hotter than hell. And, it was bad. I am used to walking around in Mobile heat. And, you know, that's a solid mid-90s, almost 100. It was nothing on Texas A&M. Interestingly enough, the peep coaches or sources within the program, they put it in quotes, said that most of the players had to get an IV. So, at halftime, excuse me. So, definitely a very hot situation. And it was loud. It was loud. It was quiet for about two quarters, and then once A&M got back into it, got a little loud again. But overall, I do have to say the fan base is very nice, though there's a particular cheer that I think the CBS broadcast caught, the beat the hell out of Alabama whoop cheer. Yeah, the 300th time that was said by the middle of the second quarter, I was pretty much done. So overall, a good experience, very good win. I think there will be a debate at some point in the near future. I think it was actually one of the more perfect wins Alabama could have expected for week two, and I have some reasoning behind it. But Legend, I guess I'll just kick it back to you. We have a little back chat going, and everyone's mic is muted while we're figuring it out. What did you see from the game that you really – what did you pull from the game this past Saturday?
Well, first of all, I thought our offense came alive, and that was my main concern. A&M's defense is definitely not the best defense in the nation, but I thought A.J. McCarron had his best game since he's been at the University of Alabama. I think he established himself as a strong candidate for the Heisman. I took away that some of the weaknesses that I felt we had going into the season, such as the secondary, it kind of showed its ugly head. But overall, I walked away very pleased with the fact that they can call Johnny Football, they can call him whatever they want to call him, but after Saturday they can call him Loser. And just proud of the team and looking forward to a beat down this Saturday at Colorado State. And I was just amazed that finally that receiving core that everyone has talked about and said it was the best receiving core in the history of the University of Alabama, I felt like it showed up on Saturday. Overall, I walked away very pleased. Nick Saban, at the end of the game, he walked the midfield and told Coach Sumlin that he lost 10 years of his life. I think I lost about 7 years of my life when T.J. Yeldon fumbled that football. But overall, very pleased with the team. The dynasty still rules, and Texas A&M learned what Miami learned, what Florida learned, what other teams have learned. You may beat the tide, but when you come back around that second time, you're going to have a mighty big problem on your hands. And I felt like Alabama established itself, as they have for the last several years, as the king of college football.
Well, I can't argue there. Speaking of establishing oneself, I'm sure, Kerry, you can tell us about this particular player that caught my eye, and I hope it caught yours too, and then you can give us what you thought of the game. O.J. Howard, Kerry, what did you think there, and what were your other, what was your takeaway from the game besides O.J.?
Well, O.J. Howard grew up in a hostile environment in front of, 80-something thousand people. 18-year-old young man goes out there and makes three huge clutch catches, all for first downs. And the third one was the biggest of all because he went up in a crowd, brought the ball down, and came down in field goal range. Not that we were playing for a field goal, but it gave you a sense of security that you were about to go up two scores. And his blocking is still a work in progress, as we knew it would be. But as a receiver, yeah, he did have a drop against Vautech, probably first game jitters. But he manned up, as some coaches in the past have said, his nuts dropped between game one and game two. He is ready to become a weapon in this offense. So that was my impression of O.J., which is a great question. Now, overall, obviously I was disappointed in the defense, giving up a school record, 628 yards. But the bottom line is to find a way to get the W, and if that just means getting two clutch stops, both on the drives and the interceptions, then that's what it means. And big shout-out to Vinny Sunseri for a pick six and two games in a row. And he buried Johnny Football's jockstrap about the 40-yard line. They'll have to dig about 8 or 10 feet deep to bring that up out of the ground. But it was a great return. It was a great victory. Not a pretty thing on defense, but the offense grew up. The offensive line as a whole grew up. A.J. put himself right back in the conversation for the Heisman. And it might not have been a thing of beauty defensively, but they got the W. They're 2-0, and roll tide.
Kerry, I've got a question for you.
Proceed.
if it hadn't been Saturday, I would have sworn it was Sunday because of the miracles that Johnny Manziel was basically bestowed. Do you think that in another circumstance at another time that could have been a complete blowout, because about three of the passes that guy put up were complete prayers?
Well, that's a valid point. And also, against any other quarterback in the league, I don't care if it's Mettenberger, Murray, whoever it is, some of those would have been sacks. And, at least three of those would have been sacks, Bird, and drive-ending sacks. And then you have the crazy horse collar call, which, well, maybe it was a good call. It should have been a sack. So, against other quarterbacks that don't have that scrambling ability, it could have been a blowout, a 3 or 4 touchdown victory. And frankly, Bird, if we don't fumble inside the 5-yard line, that game was about to get out of hand a little bit, but we kept them in it with that costly fumble.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the Bama Nation needs to do a little back down on the really, putting our defense up on the cross, because that kid is special, and he had a bunch of prayers answered. I mean, he just – welcome to football. Who's making a cocktail?
I think that's our caller, actually. We always love hearing from our callers. If you want to join in, the number is 714-510-3707. But we do have a caller on right now. Brian, welcome to BAMS Radio. What you got for us this evening?
Hey, how y'all doing, fellas?
Alabama won. Everything's groovy.
that is true. A great thing. I had two questions concerning the game. One main thing, John Fulton, what is his issue, man? It's just like he don't seem comfortable out there at all.
Well, hey, Kerry, I'm going to jump in, you guys, and then go ahead and just pull the rug out from under me. Fulton played a great game against that same player last year, guys. So let's number one, let's not forget that. Secondarily, this is a 6'5" kid that's a basketball player. I mean, he's got some freak skills. So, Thomas, I know that you've got an answer for him, and at least that's my call on it.
Absolutely. The big thing about the game plan was Nick Saban and Kirby Smart really wanted to try and keep Johnny Manziel in the pocket. In order to do that, they had to load the box. They had to put 7-8 in the box, and that left corners on an island. Asking cornerbacks to play bump and run coverage, which is you try and jam a wide receiver that's Mike Evans' size and then run with him, that's a tall order throughout the game. So the plays he made, a few of them were spectacular. A couple of them, the cornerback, John Fulton or Cyrus Jones or whoever drew Mike Evans, particularly the over-the-shoulder stuff, they were in decent position. It's just Johnny Manziel put the ball in a perfect spot. The really, really bad one was the 95-yard touchdown because Cyrus Jones was so far behind. Watching that play again, he really missed the jam. His technique, you know, his hand placement, the little things you have to do to play good bump and run coverage, he messed up. Admittedly, the young man was a wide receiver in the spring, as recently as the spring. So you'll have the technique issues there. But the good news is, for the secondary as a whole, there was not this A&M was so much more athletic thing overarching. All the stuff is technique, and that is very fixable. So if you want to polish the turd that is the secondary from the Texas A&M game, that's a way to do it. Anyway, what's your other question?
Okay. Did Geno Smith play at all? I didn't see him out there.
Well,
okay.
You know, Brian, this is Kerry. That's a great question, and I had heard that he did get a couple of snaps at the star sometime in the second half. I did pull up on RollTide.com the official participation chart, and he is listed as one of the 50 players that got a couple of snaps in the game. But, Brian, I don't think it was but maybe two or three plays he played. I'm told he's running back with the ones again this week.
Oh, okay. I was wondering because I know he played a lot last year, and I was wondering because – I mean, he was a big impact player last year. I was like, where is Geno? I was like, where is he? You know, I was kind of
really
worried
about
I
wish they'd play Geno some at the regular corner. If they're going to let Jarrett play star, I have no problem with that. But I think Geno is a better regular corner than anybody else on the team except Deion Ballou.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, too. I was like, where is Geno? But that makes sense. That makes sense. Because I know he was playing, like you said, that star position.
The word I got is he's expected to play a whole lot this week, which will bode well because he's going to be ready for Ole Miss.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I said, I love y'all guys. I listen to y'all every Wednesday. So I said this time I'm going to give y'all a call and see if y'all can answer those questions. And one last question concerning basketball. The Trevor Lacy thing, I was trying to wondering what was the issue with that. And what was the real main reason he left Alabama? I think y'all know y'all really haven't gotten into it, the real deal, because he was a star player, and you normally don't see the star player leave the team.
Brian, Trevor was influenced the whole time he was going through recruiting, and both the years he was at Alabama, he was influenced by some of his old AAU contacts. One of them is a cousin of his, and his cousin that played for Vanderbilt has had a hard on against Alabama for many years. You may recall the name. You may recall the name Howard Pride. Howard got in. He got into Trevor's head about this. He got to Trevor's daddy about this and said Coach Grant wasn't developing Trevor, and convinced him that he needed to leave Alabama if he was going to be developed properly to be ready for the NBA. So what he does is he goes and transfers to a program for a guy to who will now be playing for a guy, Mark Gottfried, who was legendary for not developing players. And the NBA scouts, they're even saying to this day, Brian, that he didn't develop the guys from NC State that went to the draft last year. So it was a big mistake. And I've been told that about a month later, Trevor had a change of heart, but by that time Coach Grant had moved on and wouldn't talk to him about coming back. So it was an unfortunate situation. I believe in my heart that if he had to do over again, he wouldn't have done it, Brian. But it is what it is, and I feel like that. I feel like Levi Randolph and Rodney Cooper, some of those guys, will step up this year and make up for the scoring that they're going to miss.
All right, fellas. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide to you, buddy. Thank you for calling, Brian.
All right. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
That was a great call. If you want to ask, if you've got questions about, you know, we threw the basketball question. Good job. Good pickup there, Kerry. Give us a call at 714-510-3707. But getting back to football, Bird, what did you think about the game? I know we got my take and Legend's take and Kerry's take. What did you take from it? I know we were talking a little before the show, but what do you got for us?
I think I called the score as being a touchdown game. I think my pick last week was 31-24, and it ended up being a touchdown game. I didn't expect, quite frankly, to see as much offense as we saw. I was real happy to see the refound offensive line and the scheming that they did. I love the right guard pull that they're running. There is some good stuff, folks, that we're seeing right before our eyes. The fact that the return of Jahlstin Fowler was a huge plus for us. I have to agree with, I listened to Brent Musburger and Herbie on another channel, and they were doing some dissection of the game, and both of them made the comment, it was a little bit akin to a basketball team or a basketball game where you want, when you're down or the game's on the line, you want to get the ball into the star point guard's hand. That's what AJ is to us. He is our star point guard, to use a basketball analogy. I never really was too worried. I sat there and came out of my chair probably three or four times, yelling at the TV saying, this guy has got to be blessed or lucky, one of the two, talking about Johnny Manziel and some of the absolute prayers. Because, I mean, Jeffrey Pagan had it. I mean, the guy was dead to rights three times on that play, and he just Houdini's his way out of it. Probably, and you guys will agree with this, and again, I'm going to use an analogy or a throwback player, D. Dallas. He reminded me so much of D. Dallas from Air Force, it's not even funny. But is he going to be able to do the same thing in the NFL? No. I'm not, and I, to keep answering your question, Thomas, I'm not freaked out about the defense. I think the defense was solid enough. I think that Manziel is going to get his numbers and his points against anybody he plays against in college football. Now, I'm going to repeat that, in college football. He won't see the same stuff in the pros, and this defense at the end of the year that you saw last week of Alabama's would not be the same defense that Johnny Manziel would run into in the next after eight games and nine games of coaching under Nick Saban. So, you know, overall, I would have given the defense a C+ or a B- even, not enough for me to pull my hair out. We had a freak of nature and that 6'5" wide receiver that's also a basketball player. And we had Manziel, and Manziel had some prayers answered. Again, I was kiddingly telling Kerry, it was a day of miracles for him, because three of those passes could easily have been intercepted and turned into points for Alabama. It could have been a 21-point game. It could have been an absolute shellacking. I give them credit. They didn't fold up, and they stayed in it. So, you know, it's a good win for Alabama. They were playing in a hostile environment. It was hot as hell down there. I've talked to several people that went to the game, and they said, oh, my God, Bird, you know, we were sweating enough to make our own gravy. Somebody passed me a biscuit. So I know that the conditions on the field were tough. I know that the conditions from a noise standpoint that the A&M people brought their A game as far as fans are concerned. And we walked out with a victory that was fairly hard fought. Let's face it, we were down 14-0, folks. 14-0, Alabama. We spotted them 14 points before we decided to wake up and settle down. Am I happy? Heck yeah, I'm happy. How's that, Thomas?
Oh, it's great. No, I agree with you. Anytime that you can go on the road and beat a top 10 team, and I again, you know, Alabama probably should have won by more. Having been in the stadium, particularly once Alabama went up 35-14, it just kind of died. The crowd noise kind of died on the vine. But, you know, a win is a win is a win in the SEC, whether it's by an inch or a mile. And again, I've said it once, I'll say it again. I think it was the perfect kind of win for the second game of the season. Solid win against a good team, tons of teaching points, even on both sides of the ball. I really want to spotlight AJ McCarron, and then a legend. I'll get your take after I kind of I want to bring. I'll lead you in with this. I thought AJ McCarron actually outplayed Johnny Manziel, and yes, if you just use statistics, I'm absolutely wrong. I understand that, but go back and watch that game. Texas A&M tried everything they could, every kind of defensive alignment they could, to stop some part of Alabama. Constant 7-8-man fronts. Well, if you're behind 14 points and Texas A&M is in a 7- or 8-man front, you pass the ball. One of the best plays that A.J. McCarron made, and this one was not really highlighted, but I think it should, was that pass to I just had a total brain fart.
Kevin Norwood.
The guy who had a personal day. Help
Kenny
me out.
Bell.
Now.
Kenny
Thank
Bell.
Thank you. I knew Kenny. I couldn't remember his last name. I'm so sorry. But anyway, the screen pass to Kenny Bell for a touchdown. I was shocked because I actually leaned over to my mother, who I was sitting next to, and I'm like, if he throws it to Kenny Bell, this is a touchdown. Because if you watch that play, the inside corner, they do a coverage switch where the inside corner is supposed to take the outside guy. Christian Jones blocks down on the inside corner, and you've got a safety in that honeycut guy trying to stop Kenny Bell. Perfect read. Absolutely perfect read. You don't get that from many quarterbacks. Then, you know, you go into the third quarter. Alabama was up 35-14. The tide is rolling. And Mark Schneider, defensive coordinator for Texas A&M, decides to back out into a 6-man front. You watch A.J. McCarron check into a run. T.J. Yeldon rips off a 15-yard game. It was like watching a ballet between 300-pounders. That's how it came off to me. Every time Texas A&M gave A.J. McCarron an inch, he took a mile. Fans, trust me, this is going to not happen once A.J. McCarron leaves. There's going to be a learning curve for the next quarterback. So absolutely enjoy it while it's still here. Legend, what do you think? Am I crazy? Am I drinking too much Crimson Kool-Aid? What you got for us?
No, I thought when the game was 14-0 that Saban put the game and Alabama season in A.J. McCarron's hands, and I felt like A.J. delivered big time. When we were down 14-0, that drive was critical to get us back to 14-7. And like I said earlier, I felt A.J. had his best game since he's been at the University of Alabama. And I agree with you, Rock. I felt like he outplayed Johnny Football. Yes, the stats may not show it, as you said, but overall, I thought A.J. McCarron had an outstanding football game. I noticed today in the USA Today, they have Johnny Football again as the front runner for the Heisman, and A.J. McCarron in the number 2 slot, and T.J. Yeldon in the number 4 slot for the Heisman right now. I felt like maybe Yeldon was a bit of a stretch, but at the same time, I agree with A.J. McCarron. And I do agree with you, next season ought to be an interesting season for Alabama. If ever there's a time to stop the dynasty, I would think it would be next year due to the quarterback transition. And I'd like to get y'all's view on who is the next great quarterback at the University of Alabama.
Well, I think it's a good point, Legend. The thing that scares me, and this is what, and I will unfortunately not be able to make the game this weekend, but what you guys need to watch for me is does he leave AJ in for a quarter and then basically play a whole bunch of other people? I mean, this is one of the things that Danny Sheridan says on the show, is that Nick does a real poor job of bringing his second and third string quarterbacks along. And, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time this year to be bringing people along. And I cringe to think what will happen if AJ goes down, and let's knock on wood on that. And then secondarily, how much he's going to get to play this weekend, because let's face it, I don't think he's going to be needed. And I don't even know if I've started. And the question I've got is who's your number 2 guy? Who do you run at number 2? Because I'm not real happy with Sims.
Yeah, I think it's a waste of time to play Sims myself in that number 2 slot. I think we need to be developing a quarterback for next season, and I do not believe that it's Blake Sims. Whoever it is, I think that we need to get him some playing time, And I agree with Bird. I think we need to get him some playing time this weekend if the situation calls for it. And I do expect the call for it. Because next season, again, I mean, we'll have Cooper back. We'll have Yeldon back. The line will be a year stronger. The defense is young. So the only position going into next season and possibly stopping a UCLA-type run in basketball of the 70s for the University of Alabama is the quarterback position. And I'd love to hear what Kerry has to say about this because I know he's tuned in to the University of Alabama as well as anybody in the nation.
Well, except Cecil Hurt. But you're right, Brad Legend. I appreciate you saying that. Here's the deal with quarterback. I'm going to answer your question of about 2 minutes ago first, Legend. The next great quarterback at the University of Alabama is going to be in the 11th grade this fall. His name is Ricky Town. He's the next great quarterback. Point number two is we got to figure out who is the next serviceable quarterback that can get us from A.J. to Ricky Town. Is it David Cornwell, who's coming in January? Maybe. Is it Alec Morris, who I thought was further along than apparently he is? Maybe. Here's the wild card in the whole situation. When they decided who to take on the bus and the plane to A&M, they took four quarterbacks, A.J. McCarron, Blake Sims, Luke Del Rio, which I wouldn't have thought, and Alec Morris. They took four guys. So apparently right now they have more faith in Del Rio than any of the other true freshmen, which doesn't bode well for Cooper Bateman or Parker McLeod. I kind of like Bateman because he can run a little bit, and he's got a pretty good arm. But it doesn't appear to me – I've been told that the next great quarterback is Ricky Town, and he's only going to be a junior in high school this fall. The Battle Royale next spring, I got no way to predict who's going to win that. I've no clue. But, well, I'll tell you, I've one clue. Is that Del Rio and Morris traveled to College Station and the other guys didn't. As far as A.J., Bird, the minimum that he will play this Saturday, the minimum, is two quarters plus the first series of the second half. That's the minimum, and it's not even with Saban debatable. That's how he believes his starters deserve to play. And that's the entire first offense. We'll play two full quarters and the first series of the third quarter. After that, we'll probably see Blake Sims for five or six series. And I'm thinking in the fourth quarter we may see Alec Morris is the way I see that shaping out.
That's awesome. Well, it's again, I don't know that I agree with that, but you know what? I'm not making $5 million a year, and I don't have as many rings on my hands as Nick Saban has. So, you know, it's hosting the Full Moon High from Bluff Park show, and guess what?
I got a question.
Yeah.
How far along in this show are we going to go before mentioning the blockbuster NFL trade today?
I was thinking how I could work this in.
I'm working it in for you.
Well, I appreciate it. So why don't you tell us about the blockbuster NFL trade that makes the Browns out to be kind of, well, for lack of a better
term,
stupid. Thank you.
Well, as my good friend Cecil Hurt put it, Trent Richardson hit the lottery today because he was traded to the Indianapolis Colts, where he'll play with Andrew Luck and his former teammate Josh Chapman, among other very many talented guys, and be on a team that's probably going to the playoffs instead of a team that was going to be lucky to win three games. And
oh,
I'm happy for Trent. I'm really
be happy for me because I am a lifelong Colt fan, and you just made my night. I thought
everybody knew this. It's been blowing my Twitter up for the last hour. And I couldn't go any further without bringing it up, Legend. But
what did the Colts give up? They give up a couple first round picks or something.
Yeah.
A first-round pick in next year's draft.
Oh, my goodness. Trent Richardson, my goodness. I mean, that is Super Bowl material right there. It really is. I mean, and they got some great young receivers over in Indianapolis, too.
I mean, I'm so happy for Trent to get out of that cesspool, and now he's on a, I don't want to say a Super Bowl contender, but he's definitely on a playoff contender, okay? And I'm happy for the kid, and I just didn't think we could go any further because that's just blockbuster.
It's absolutely unbelievable. Now, in terms of week three, if he'll play, he might run a little bit, but it's tough for me to think that he'll get all the terminology down in what amounts to, you know, 3 days. But, hey, a team that has the number one overall pick from the 2 years ago draft and the number three overall pick, Colts are sitting pretty right now. I actually have to play against Trent Richardson in fantasy football this week. So, now everything gets a little more dicey in my little fantasy football world. But thank you so much for that, Kerry. I appreciate the help out there. Guys, it's about 8:30. Why don't we take a quick break, and when we get back, we can talk a little Colorado State, or if we have a little more about Texas A&M, we can go there too. Reminder to fans, if you have a question or you just want to talk to Kerry, Legend, Bird, or myself, the number is 714-510-3707. We will be right back on BAMS Radio.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Jump to the left. With your hands on your hips.
You're taking me to the sky. And it's a bell with sound. It's really something inside. Yeah, 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 yeah. Get to the top of the hill.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. With Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice in fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands at a fraction of what other chain stores charge. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama, on Highway 31. Come see us or check out our website at www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com.
www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
And we are back on a Wednesday night edition of BAMS Radio. Yes, the only sports show that either is insane enough or cool enough to play Time Warp during the show. That's us. As I was saying before the break, if you wanted to talk to us, give us a call. Well, somebody listen to me. Our good friend Marty was on hold, and I just made him live. Marty, what you got for us this evening?
Hey, I just want to congratulate y'all guys for having the best talk show on internet radio of any of I ever heard. This is the best panel that you could put together by none of anybody. You know, I just want to congratulate y'all guys on that. One thing, I love you, Bird, and you guys, but I got to disagree with you on one thing on Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel. I have never in my life of watching football, even Cam Newton, I've seen a player that can extend a play as long as that guy can extend a play. I mean, what do you expect a cornerback or anybody else to do to cover somebody that long? I watched Evans run around in a circle. I'm talking about in a circle and the cornerback trying to stay with him, having that much time to do that for Johnny Manziel to get him the football. I mean, and going to the next level, this is what I disagree. You know, do you remember a guy named Fran Tarkenton? You know, kind of reminds me of Johnny Manziel. You know, he could run around everywhere and extend the play to get the playoff. You know, that's where I see Johnny Manziel because, you know, this top player just don't come along very often.
Maybe he could go for the Browns.
well, you think the Browns may be figuring on that? You know, that might be why they want him to do that. But good luck with them if they do.
I think this day and age, Marty, there's too much speed in the NFL secondary and too much size to you're not going to see the same defenses in the NFL that Manziel sees in college. And you know, we can agree to disagree, but it'll be fun to watch him. And there's no two ways about it. He is an absolute talent on the field. He does. I hadn't thought of Fran Tarkenton. I keep thinking D. Dallas, but Fran Tarkenton is the perfect analogy. He's kind of built slight. You know, I don't even think he's as big as Fran was, but he absolutely makes. He turns shit and turns it into shinola or whatever they call it. I mean, basically takes flowers and grows them in nothing because it's an amazing player.
Well, I think Fagan is a grown man out there, and he couldn't get his hands around and bring him down. It just reminds me so much. I remember watching Fran Tarkenton play, in my younger days, and he was an amazing player, had a long career. But, with Fagan just fighting to try to get the guy down, I think he does have a future in the NFL. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope he goes to the NFL. I'm tired of Johnny Football anyway. But another thing about that game, I was a really – don't get me wrong, Roll Tide, I'm glad we won the game. And, oh, it was great. But, getting towards the end of the game, when they had a shot and I was kicking the onside kick, I said, God, please don't let them get this onside kick, because I knew if they throwed a Hail Mary in that game that the odds of them coming down with that ball – was better odds than us coming down with that ball and tying that thing up. And it scared me to death. My butt was tighter than a hair in a biscuit during that game.
Well, I think if what you would see if A&M had thrown a Hail Mary, you would have seen basically all of Alabama's receivers go up to battle for the ball. It wouldn't be your typical group. But You did highlight a defensive lineman in Jeffrey Pagan who had a great game. But a guy that we haven't talked about yet, and I just brought up in the back chat, I want to give another shout-out, and it's to A'shaun Robinson.
Yep.
That is a 19-year-old grown-ass man on the defensive line.
Yep.
I love that kid.
Oh, my God. What planet did he just drop off onto Alabama's grid? He's amazing.
Absolutely. It was, I think he got one of the sacks on Manziel, or if he didn't, he was blowing stuff up.
Yeah, Alabama just keeps bringing in great defensive linemen after defensive linemen. And I agree. I felt like he dominated the game when he was in there for a period of time and flashed All-American potential for the future. I think he has an unlimited upside. And, hell, I'm still high over Trent Richardson with Andrew Luck in Indianapolis. I mean, woo! I love it, baby. I love it. I mean, the coaches, that's amazing. I love that. But getting back to Alabama, I'm on my Indianapolis Colt high there. But I know Trent's high tonight to get out of Cleveland, my Lord. But I think we got a lot of good young defensive linemen, a lot of good young linebackers, and – I mean, this thing just keeps rolling. Every time you look up, a five-star player is shining for the University of Alabama, and I'm amazed. I really am.
Hey, I got one more question before I get off.
Yeah,
here.
Go ahead, Marty. Go ahead.
This is a question to the panel. Maybe y'all know more about it than I do. Let's go change of pace from Johnny Football and Texas A&M Alabama to let's go to DJ Fluker. This crap that's been going on and circling around on the internet and all. Is there any truth to this? And I don't know if it's just internet rumor or what, that Luther Davis had an axe to grind with Alabama and maybe have forged DJ Fluker's signature on a lot of stuff and set up a lot of stuff. Have you heard any of this stuff?
I've heard both those things are true. The axe he thinks he has to grind is he's upset that Alabama's doctors didn't find some kind of neck problem he had that got him disqualified from trying out for the NFL. He blames out in Alabama. As far as the part about forging DJ's signature, I've been told that he did it on at least one, possibly two different documents. But the bottom line of all of it is I've been told that Alabama doesn't have anything to worry about.
Well, that sounds good. I'm hoping that's true because, you know, it's kind of died down if you noticed a little bit. It's a little, especially in the media out there because they run wild with it there for a while. Every time I turned the TV on, I was hearing something about that. I got tired of it. But, you know, so hopefully that's the truth. I really do.
Marty, what cracks me up is that they show the picture yesterday of back to Manziel. Manziel, you know, with the broker standing next to him signing autographs. There's pictures, and he's and of course, you know, we're worried about a DJ Fluker thing, and they can't nail Manziel, and they've got, you know, photographic evidence, and they've got people popping up all over the place that are nailing the guy, and it's like the NCAA is just has done an astoundingly good job of saying, hey, we have no nuts. You can do anything you want to out there because if you lawyer up, we're screwed.
Definitely Auburn put down the blueprint to how to deal with the NCAA. That's one thing I can give Auburn credit for. Other than that, I can't give them credit for anything else, but I can give them credit for that. Hey, other question. Is Drew going to be on tonight?
Yeah, man, at 9 o'clock. And so hang around for that. And typically, you know, you want to know who played this weekend, and I bet we've got somebody on the panel that can tell you.
I think Marty just quit caring about that this year.
I'm just so excited, man. I'm so excited being 2-0.
And now he don't ever ask about it. I mean, I go through all this trouble to pull.
Who played this weekend?
Oh, okay. Well, I got that, Marty. I've got it. 50 guys got into the playing field of action at College Station. We'll go over the starters first and then the subs. On offense, left tackle, Cyrus Quanjo. Left guard, Ari Quanjo, still trying to figure out why he jumped offside three times. Center, Ryan Kelly. Right guard, Anthony Steen. Who I'm told is good to go for this weekend. Right tackle, Austin Shepard. Tight end, Brian Vogler. Had a couple of big catches as well as the ones by O.J. O.J. Howard also started. I was not aware of this, but we came out in a double tight with O.J. and Brian. Quarterback, so that was O.J.'s first career start. Quarterback was A.J., running back T.J., and then you had Amari Cooper and DeAndre White out wide at receiver. Defensively, we started Ed Stinson, Brandon Ivory, and Jeffrey Pagan up front as normal. Linebackers, we started Adrian Hubbard, Trey DePriest, C.J. Mosley. So we started an extra set of DBs. We started Ballou and Fulton at the corners, and we started Sunseri and Haha at safety, and the nickel was Jarek Williams. The people that came in off the bench, D. Hart. Now, a lot of these guys are just freshmen, just special teams, okay? But the people that came in off the bench were D. Hart, Reuben Foster, Cyrus Jones, Kenny Bell, Ryan Anderson, played a lot at linebacker, the Jack, Tanae Patrick, Bradley Seal, Kenyon Drake, who had a wonderful comeback game, I might add, 50 yards rushing and a touchdown, Reggie Raglan, Maurice Smith, freshman corner. I believe that was special teams. Christian Jones, Alti Tenpenny was on some kick coverage. Geno Smith played a little bit at nickel, and I'm told he's back running with the ones today. Dylan Lee is on every special team pretty much. Landon Collins, same thing, but he also saw time at the dimeback. Nick Perry had to come in after some injuries in the secondary. Cody Mandel, another solid game by that young man. Denzel Duvall, who played Jack when we were in base defense. Cade Foster, LaMichael Fanning got some time. Charleston Fowler, who scored the winning touchdown. Xavier Dixon, who's now seeing more time at end than he is at Jack. Cole Mazza, who had a couple of shaky snaps, but AJ saved him. Kevin Norwood, tight end Malcolm Faison. I believe that was to block on kick returns. We mentioned A'shaun Robinson. Tight end Brandon Green had some good blocks. One of these days they're going to throw him one and nobody's going to be ready for it. And then Darren Lake backing up at the nose guard. So total of 50 guys got to see action according to the official participation chart.
That was huge in that environment.
And that brings you up
to play, you know. That's great. Hey,
great
one thing I did leave off is, man, I thought Landon Collins played a hell of a game. I really did. I mean, he was flying all over the field.
I thought he played solid most of the time. There was one or two plays where I felt like he got a little lost in coverage, but I think 90% of the time he played very well, and he always plays well on special teams. He's moving on up that depth chart. He's going to be out there sooner than later in the regular secondary rotation.
I'd like to see him at cornerback because I think we're really thin at cornerback at the university. I know he's a safety.
Hey, oh, he'll hit you now. But I want to see him move Geno from nickel to cornerback and let Geno be one of the corners if they want Jarrett to be the nickel.
Yeah, I think Cyrus Jones is a little lost. I know he's traded positions, and but he looked a little lost out there to me. And when Blue went out of the game, I knew right then, I thought, oh, my Lord, they're going to score every time they get the football with Blue out of the game, because that was a – what's his status, Kerry? I hadn't heard nothing on his status.
Legend, it doesn't look like Deion Blue or Kevin Norwood, either one is going to be in uniform this weekend. It does look like Anthony Steen will be. However, they both got a shot to get back for Ole Miss.
Birds farting in the bird cage.
Oh, I could have warned you about that.
And he's continuing to. Oh, and there's the third one, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, the Birdman is letting it out tonight. He's letting them fly tonight. He's the AJ McCarron of farting tonight.
I've been over there a few times.
Oh, then you know how bad it is. I'm gonna have to go outside here in a minute. I tell you what, some of them A&M fans look like they was farting on Saturday, too. They were some sad faces on television. There ain't nothing better than watching sad faces of the opposing team.
We do have a question from the chat room, so we can move it off the fart jokes.
By the way, the call just got dropped, and Scott got it back. That was good.
Good. The question from the chat room is, what was Norwood's injury? High ankle sprain?
No idea.
I didn't know that he was injured. So
he didn't play much in the second half, but I've just totally drawn a blank. I'm really not even sure.
I'm not either. I mean, is he showing up on the injury charge right now, Kerry?
He's not even going through practice.
Okay, so
he's wearing a black jersey and pedaling a stationary bicycle along with Deion Blue.
So it could be a high ankle sprain then.
Very possible.
Okay,
but him and Blue both have a shot to be back for Ole Miss. There was question about Steen, but he was able to get back out there today. Kellen Williams was good to go and actually played well in the fourth quarter for Alabama this past week. Kellen's a fifth-year senior, and Coach Saban considers him kind of the sixth starter on the offensive line. He was ready to go if Steen couldn't, but it looks like Steen's going to be starting this Saturday. Other two guys probably won't even be in uniform. They're probably down there in sweats and their jerseys. So don't see Norwood or Ballou, either one, dressing this Saturday, it doesn't look like.
Hey, guys, I'm going to get off here and just listen to y'all on the other side. And Roll Tide, hey, Legend, great to hear from you, man. We'd like to hear from you more out here on Radio Land. Appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate that, Marty. Always enjoy your calls, brother, and your insight. And it's an honor to be back with the BAMS radio crew tonight. It really is.
Well, I'm just going to jump in briefly on this Kevin Norwood injury. I can't find anything that says what his specific injury is, just that he's nursing an injury and is quote-unquote questionable. I know that you said earlier, Kerry, starters will get two quarters in the first series of the second half, but if there's someone that needs rest, I hope Nick Saban rests him. But again, he makes a lot more money than I do, and he has a lot more rings, so I'm not going to question him much more than I hope. I trust the method. There's a method to his madness.
One of the chat room for me to jump in real quick, Rock, is that one of the attendees at the game said that Kevin was sitting up on the cart, but they actually took him to an ambulance and took him away from the stadium in an ambulance.
I was there and I didn't see that, but I was, you know, good spot by whoever was in attendance. Well, we've kind of beaten Texas A&M to death over the first 50 minutes of the program, and I know our friend Drew DeArmond will be calling in the next 10, 15 minutes. Why don't we go to Colorado State really quick? I have to admit, I'll have my little heaping of crow pie here. I have not had a chance to prepare for Colorado State like I did for Texas A&M. I've been writing like crazy.
No way.
Yeah, I know. Alabama was just going to lose the game because I didn't prepare for Colorado State. No, Colorado State is – they're coming into the game at 1-2. They had a loss to Colorado and a loss at Tulsa, and then they beat the mighty Cal Poly Mustangs. Okay, before I go any further, let's talk about that first game. Colorado State, obviously a big rivalry. Colorado might be among the top 10 worst programs in Division One at the end of last year, and I don't think they've turned it around very much. To lose by two touchdowns at home to Colorado should give fans a taste of what they're coming in for. Obviously, Colorado State is coached by former Bama offensive coordinator Jim McElwain, and they have three notable players. Their kicker, whose name I'm trying to desperately find in these notes, is on the Groza watch list. Their center is up for the Remington, and their tight end is on the Mackey watch list. Now, that's all well and good, but those lists are huge. Basically, if you have a pulse, are returning, and have seen any kind of game time, the early lists, you will absolutely get on those watch lists early. So take that with a grain of salt. But, you know, players to watch, you have, I'm going to butcher this name, Chris Inokwe is actually their leading rusher. He has gained about 250 yards through three games. Definitely not that good. His backup is Capri Bibbs. They both average about 70 yards a game. They haven't seen anything like Alabama. I do expect that to go down, obviously. Quarterback is a guy named Garrett Grayson. He's averaging 202 yards passing a game. I want to kind of link what I said earlier with Texas A&M and the front seven for Alabama. I think the front seven terrorized Johnny Manziel. And with even if Grayson can run, which he averages, you know, 0.7 yards a game running, he's not Johnny Manziel. I really think the Alabama front seven will have a field day. Projecting the front seven out further in the season, if you're not a mobile quarterback, Zach Mettenberger of the LSU Tigers, you could be in for a really long game. I think the front seven is going to terrorize folks where they don't have to play contain. They just have to play straight up find quarterback, sack quarterback game. But those are your real big offensive guys. Realize, again, the two running backs, they don't average very much, and Grayson is not what he's not exactly setting the world on fire. Even the wide receivers, they have two guys that have 100 yards through three games. You know, I don't know what else to say beyond that. Defensively, you know, I'm kind of swimming upstream on this one. There's not a lot here. You don't barely beat Cal Poly, an FCS program, lose to your rival, which was a bad program, and then come play Alabama even after an emotional victory in College Station and really expect that great a game. I think this game is going to be perfect for continued growth on both sides of the ball for Alabama's ones. I'm really looking forward to the secondary, however it's been shaken up by Nick Saban, to take a big step forward, gain back some confidence, because that game against Ole Miss, with Ole Miss beating Texas this past week, has some intrigue. I'm not going to say it's going to be a barn burner, but there's some intrigue there. So I think for how the schedule is set up, for what Alabama will be able to get out of this, my aforementioned perfect win against Texas A&M providing teaching points, this is a great dress rehearsal to work on those teaching points and continue to gain confidence and establish team identity. That's really what I'm looking for in this game. And then obviously once the ones rotate out, which I expect they will shortly after the second half begins, give the backups some time, get them game action, let them get their feet wet. Because, I mean, look at Deion Blue. Deion Blue's injured. You know, next guy up's got to be ready to rock and roll. And welcome to the SEC, as far as I'm concerned, with the whole second half that I'm looking for in this game. That's all I've really got on Colorado State. You know, welcome back, Coach McElwain. I'm sure you'll have Colorado State ready to play Alabama, and I'm sure Alabama will beat you by 50. That's Colorado State in a nutshell.
50. It may be that lopsided. I don't think it will be, because that's just not Saban's modus operandi. I mean, in fact, what game was it I was watching last weekend that it was obvious they were running up the score? And I looked at Mrs. Bird and I said, that wouldn't happen with Nick, man. I'm telling you, he would have taken his foot off the accelerator a long time ago. But, you try to do some G2 on these guys, and let's face it, they're playing in they're playing out west, and not to denigrate the quality of football out west, but there's an awful lot of white guys that play football, and they're just slower and smaller. I mean, any way you look at it. So until you get to Oregon, and all of a sudden it's a black team again. But I mean, bottom line is that Legend shaking his hand. But you know, your BYUs and Utahs and Colorado States and Air Forces and San Diego States and schools like that, unless they got a direct pipeline over to Hawaii where they get the big, you know, Samoan kids that are Mormon. You know, I mean, they're just not that big. They're not that fast. They're athletes, but they're not of an SEC caliber. And, God, I'm hoping that we get to see more than Blake Sims at backup quarterback. And and something that nobody on this panel has mentioned is that we have won the last two games basically with Amari Cooper as a no-show. I mean, he was anointed as one of the, you know, maybe one of the greatest ever of all time to catch the football after his freshman season. And he's basically been asleep at the wheel. And we have been winning handily, you know, with the core of receivers outside of Amari Cooper. Anybody have any commentary on that?
I do. I found out Kevin Norwood has an ankle problem. And Deion Blues is a turf toe. And Dakota Ball, who is either a third or fourth team defensive lineman, depending on who you ask, is out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken foot sustained in practice. Amari Cooper's problem is that he's not looking the ball into his hands like he did last year. He's trying to catch it and run, and you can't do that. He's got as many drops in the first two games, I think, as he had all year last year. And it'll get better, but he's going to have to refocus himself. He's got the ability. He proved it last year, but you still got to look the ball into your hands. And not all the incompletes to Amari are AJ's fault. I'll just leave it at that.
No, it's obvious. It's obvious. He's asleep at the wheel. I mean, there's too many passes coming close to him that other kids are catching that Amari, and I agree with you, he's got his eye off the ball. So, but I thought that was interesting that we played two games and he's been a no-show, and our offense is still fairly potent, even without him being out there in the typical Amari Cooper fashion where he's hauling down impossible catches.
I think it'll come back.
I do, too. Yes.
It could be as early as this week, but I'd rather, you know, if he's going to at least do it by the Ole Miss game when we really got to have it.
Well, I'd like to see him do it against Kim Dichie Jr.
Sure.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, he's maybe my second least favorite guy behind, my little buddy down at LSU.
You have LSU friends. I'm so sorry.
What a cruel bunch this is.
Let me tell you this. He's got an LSU mailbox right next to his mailbox, so I take it he's got an LSU neighbor that lives right next to him. Two LSU neighbors that live right next to him. I mean, so Burr's definitely got the Louisiana connection going on here in the state of Alabama, which is a good thing. I mean, come on. LSU gave us Nick Saban. So, I mean, I'm not hating on LSU. I really ain't. But I don't like LSU, but I'm not hating on LSU.
They gave us Landon Collins.
I think we just got a big-time offensive tackle two weeks ago from the state of Louisiana. So the state of Louisiana has been very good to the University of Alabama when you really get down to it. And yeah.
I'm just going to view it as Alabama rescued all those players from Louisiana, but I digress.
But before we jump into a break and Drew, which I'm looking forward to hearing Drew DeArmond again this evening, Kerry, anything on Colorado State, the Rams? I mean, what's your take?
I couldn't name one player on the team. I always liked Coach Mack. The two times a year we got to interview him. But, you know, we're looking at a 49-7 type of ball game here. So good chance for some young guys to play.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask that question, the young guy thing. Obviously, we expect Alabama to clear the benches, such as it were. Who are y'all looking for? You know, Kerry, you can go first. if you could pick one player that hasn't seen very much game action, who are you looking for? My personal, well, I want to see Derrick Henry, but you know, what about
well,
you?
Oh, thanks. Well, I want to see I want to see him get the ball. I want to see Tim Penny get some more runs, and I want to see Chris Black play almost the entire second half at wide receiver.
Bird, what you got? Assuming I think I had muted.
I was muted. And I was actually working in the chat room there for a second and trying to answer chat room. Now I'm juggling two balls. My fingers are crossed that AJ puts up real gaudy numbers in the first half, 300 yards in the first half, so he gets mentioned in more Heisman talk, and then we continue to finally hone our offensive blocking schemes. And by the way, guys. Man, we're looking at counter tray stuff. We're looking at some old school football. These guys are starting to run, and it's just tickling the crap out of me. I think as the season goes on, we're going to see more and more and more of this offensive line start to exert its personality. Let's put it that way. How's that?
I like it. Legend, you're last, and I hope y'all got your muted thing redone. I'm glad this is the first time I've tripped over that. So, Legend, what you got?
Ask the question again, Thomas, for the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. Question is, everyone expects that Alabama will kind of clear the benches against Colorado State. It's just a pretty large mismatch. Who are you looking forward to seeing play who we haven't really seen so far on the team?
Well, Amari Cooper.
That is one way to look at it.
I really like to see him crank up and put up a couple of touchdowns because I agree with Bird. I think that's kind of the missing ingredients to maybe the best offense or possibly the second best offense in the nation. I like to see some of them young running backs. I like to see Henry. I hadn't really seen a whole lot from him that's been just overly impressive so far in my view. I think Tenpenny has looked a little bit more impressive than he has, so... And I'd like to see some of them young linebackers this weekend, too. And what's our secondary? I keep going back to our secondary, but what's some young cornerbacks that maybe we might see that we hadn't seen that might give us some hope for the future? Anybody got a quick remark about
names.
That?
I'll give you two names, Maurice Smith and Eddie Jackson.
Well, I sure hope we see them because I'm a little worried about the cornerback position at the University of Alabama right now. Bird's shaking his head. I don't know if that means he's farted again or.
Bird knows we're getting Marlon Humphrey, and we wish we had him this year.
Absolutely on the Marlon Humphrey thing. Quick point about the secondary. Nick Saban has said that basically everyone's job is available. I don't want to say he's deconstructing the secondary, but I think you'll see a pretty solid rotation, seeing who's got what where throughout the Colorado State game. Because Ole Miss, again, they dismantled Texas, which isn't really saying much now this past weekend. And they're coming into town, and they have enough skill on the outside that Alabama's corners are going to be challenged. And Alabama's going to have to use a lot of the same kind of defensive containment concepts because Bo Wallace is fairly mobile. He's certainly not Johnny Manziel.
He is no Johnny Manziel. Why do we keep going to that? Bo Wallace is going to get scissored. He is. Guys, I'm telling you, Ole Miss is not Texas A&M. Ole Miss is Ole Miss. Ole Miss will forever be Ole Miss. And before, you know, and I don't want to have to eat my words in 2 weeks, but I am not losing 1 minute of sleep over Ole Miss at all, period.
Well, I wasn't losing sleep. I was just saying, mobile quarterback, you got to defend
you're
a little
just
differently.
Stirring my pots, what you're doing? Hey, is it break time? Because we got Drew DeArmond coming on in just a minute. He may even be on right now. I don't know.
He's not on hold.
He's not
calling
until about 10 after.
Okay, well, it's about 9:03. I could use a little break personally. When we come back, we'll mark a little bit of time until Drew comes on with us. Again, chat room, help us out. We always love to take your questions on the air. And if you want to get in quickly before Drew goes on with us, give us a call at 714-510-3707. We will be right back for more BAMS Radio. Where did I hide that drop? There it is.
So, what makes BAM's tailgate so darn special?
Sunbelt Inflatable Tents can supply you with custom-designed tent for your tailgate needs. Corporations, businesses,
or just the most hardcore fans are the customers of Sunbelt Inflatable Tents.
Reach them at their website, www.sunbeltinflatabletents.com, and ask for Billy. Or call 251-247-1169 to order.
Back on BAMS Radio. It's about 9:05. We are waiting for our good friend Drew DiArmond to be calling in the next 5 or 10 minutes. So we have a little bit of downtime. Carrie, I'm putting you on the spot. I hope you saw the back chat. If not, well, I'm about to walk away with egg on my face. It's that time. We just sold our tents. Now I'm getting kind of hungry. Carrie, can you help me out? I think it's time to get hungry on BAMS Radio.
I'm boycotting the weeks that there's no barbecue. So here's the deal. No tent, no barbecue, no spot.
Oh, man. Talk about
– those people that deem Colorado State is not a big enough game to feed people or put a tent up, those people can go to hell and they will not get spots.
I feel like I'm in the GM's office of a radio station all of a sudden, and Kerry Clark is sitting back there with a big
cigar. They won't get it from me, I'll say that.
Oh, man. Talk about it.
They can lick the crack of my ass.
not only do we have the irascible Carrie this evening, who's not getting his barbecue from Big Head Chuck, but we've also got the crusty Carrie, who is basically preferring his big hairy butt for us to all give a big snacky taste to. It is a full moon here on High Top Bluff Park, Alabama. What can I say?
Full moon sponsoring us now?
Not yet.
I can talk about them.
Yeah, well, we could talk about, the wing guy down the street, the Wings Plus Five, that's going to sponsor us. So,
Go ahead. Tell us. I haven't heard about that yet.
Wings Plus Five is going to jump in with both feet, and at the tailgates, they'll be giving us their smorgasbord of different wonderful wings. And they're in the Bluff Park Shopping Center, directly across from the Piggly Wiggly, right off of Lorna Road. And it's some of the best dadgum wings I've ever had. I mean, I ask Miss Bird, what do you want for dinner? And she goes, man, just run down to Wings Plus Five and get us some wings. And it's like, so I started chatting to the dude and said, you know, we ought to get you on the air. And so here we go. So I guess, you know, since Big Head Chuck won't bring up the stuff and we don't get Big Heads.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to give him 30 seconds.
You know, it's.
Put me on a stopwatch. Ready? Go.
Go.
Big Heads Barbecue is great to cater your event, large, small, whatever. You can go to www.bigheadsbbq.net. You can call 251-379-0094. You can email bigheadchuck@gmail.com. I can tell you firsthand experience, I've tried most everything he's got. You won't get a bad dish. It's all good. Colorado State.
I'm not feeling the love, man. You're just trying to run through this. This is not like the Kerry Clark
You don't beat me, you don't get the love.
That made me salivate. I mean, before.
No barbecue this week, no salivation.
Oh, God.
Salivation without representation.
Well, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Next week, he is planning on bringing it to the Ole Miss game, so he'll get like a 2-minute spot next week.
At that point, then, I'll be jumping in with both feet because the triple threat, I lay up at night dreaming about the triple threat.
What's made up of the triple threat?
Dude, it's the big honking conica sausage that's wrapped in a big honking piece of meat that's wrapped up in a big honking piece of bacon, and then he smokes that bad boy, and then they haul it out and put the big head chuck secret sauce, and I've got about a half a gallon of that sauce upstairs in my refrigerator as we speak. So I could run off and make myself a fried bologna sandwich with some big head chuck sauce. And you guys even wouldn't know I was gone. I could mute and be gone.
Yeah, why don't you try that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're going to do that, you need to bring us all one. That's all I'm going to say.
That could be arranged. For you, Rock, it could be arranged. But I'm not going to do anything for Krusty Carey tonight. Mm.
Too busy sweating these Braves games.
Wow, you guys are, 40 games in first place?
Not anymore, 8.
Yeah. How about the Texas, not to bring baseball into the Texas Rangers. What a, for the ages, swoon that those guys have done. So
Should have got rid of Josh Hamilton. Serves them right.
That serves them right. Yeah, they really are sucking hind tit right now. And it's just, and they were 8 games up 17 days ago. And now they're like, foundering in the pack, hoping they can get a wild card bid.
Don't have access to a TV right now. I'm in a smaller room where my little studio is, but it says the Braves lead Washington 4-2 with 2 outs in the bottom of the 8th and men on 2nd and 3rd. So if they can get this one out, maybe Kimbrell would do it. He surely blew the first game yesterday. Kimbrell's a big Alabama fan. There is a Bama, connection here.
I didn't realize that.
Craig Kimbrell signed with Alabama. But when the Braves made an offer he couldn't refuse, he went straight out of JUCO to the Braves. He's originally from Huntsville. He was spotted at the game in Pasadena when we beat Texas for the national championship in full Bama gear. And he's been known to give a roll tide. His battery mate, Brian McCann, also signed with Alabama out of high school. But the Braves made him an offer he couldn't refuse. So, there's some roll tide connection there. But anyway, back to football. Expecting to hear from Drew in the next couple of minutes, but there's plenty to talk about before that. There haven't been any commitments since last week convened, but there was a really funny tweet today by Cameron Robinson, the number one offensive lineman in America, probably the number two player in America, that is committed to Alabama, and It was a drawing of the entire state of Louisiana, the little boot, and it was crimson with a script A in the middle. It was pretty funny. He's talking about how we're getting all these good players out of Louisiana this year. And so he's kind of rubbing it in a little bit. So good to see Cameron doing that. And, our recruits, they never lost faith during the game. They felt like that Alabama would find a way to win out in College Station. It's already rubbing off on them. The commitments there are coming on Twitter with their roll tides and, I knew my boys would pull it out and that kind of stuff. So that's always good to see. And when Drew joins us, we will talk a little bit about recruiting. Specifically, I went and actually heard a talk last night by a recruiting guru. It's a guy that writes for scout.com and bamamag.com. His name is John Garcia, and I heard him speak last night. And we're supposed to keep that kind of stuff off the record. But I can tell you that the craziest two positions to try to keep up with in this year's Alabama class, and Drew will go into this a little more when he joins us. The craziest two positions are safety and the offensive line, because it's just impossible to figure out how many and who else they're going to take. You can guess this and postulate and theorize, but it's really – I don't think anybody knows for sure exactly how those two positions are going to shake out, not counting what's committed now. There's a safety committed now from South Georgia that's probably not going to graduate high school. So his spot's probably going to be open. That's Chris Williams. And then there's another position that's probably going to be open, although it's hard to say because he transferred to Florida, but there's a decent chance that either by academics or by flipping to another school that Bo Scarborough's position could be open. So they could take up to 8 or 9 more guys in this class, or at least 7 to 8 more guys in this class, even though they've already got 20 committed. So then there's talk about some guys might be offered gray shirts and stuff like that. And whenever Drew calls in, we'll touch on all that. And but it's going to be a top 2 or 3 class in the nation, and it's still got a chance to be number one consensus. It may not be number one on every single internet board, but it's definitely got a chance to be number one consensus class this year when you tally it all up and average it all out. So we'll get into that a little bit more whenever Drew calls in the next 3 or 4 minutes.
You see that the computers have ranked Auburn?
I saw this. This blows my mind.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Basically, one of the BCS computers through week 3 has Auburn ranked number 1 in the country. And it's kind of just a huge – actually, it's not kind of. It is a huge joke because those formulas don't mature and become valid with only 3 data points. You need 6 or 7 or 8 games to really – have the formula make sense. But as is, Auburn's number 1 in the country according to one of the BCS computers. Even if it was the real BCS formula, it would be thrown out as the top 1. So, that's kind of a non-starter for me. I saw it, I facepalmed, I moved on.
I just thought I'd throw that out there for some snappy repartee.
When you say facepalm, do you mean that you slapped yourself?
Yes. There was
heart?
A face palm.
Was it hard?
There is a red mark on my forehead, put it to you that way.
Wow.
Yep.
That's pretty brutal.
Radio is a hard business. You gotta keep with the times, I suppose.
I'm believing a little easier now.
Well, imagine
number's gonna be 2. Shout out to the Yanks. They rallied tonight. They're still keeping in the wild card race, Bird. They're not out of it yet. They're not going to win the division. That's going to be Boston. But the Yankees are still hanging in there for the wild card. And actually, Legends Orioles have still got a mathematical chance at the wild card. They're not out of it yet either.
Yeah, no, they're hanging in too. And it's, it's been the longest season ever for a Yankee fan. I'm a Yankee in exile. So, oh, well. Maybe if I wear my Yankee gear more often.
Well, you could wear your Notre Dame gear. They're interchangeable. They're pretty much the same team in different leagues.
I don't know that I've got any Notre Dame gear. I got that stupid shirt that I bought just to kind of rub it in.
Okay. Wear that shirt with a Yankee hat and you'll be good.
It's that whole crack of the button comment. Anyway.
Well, that will be edited off the podcast.
Of course it will. Of course it will.
Absolutely. Bringing up Auburn there's a game we can talk about where we're waiting for Drew to come in. Auburn goes to LSU this weekend. The line is something like LSU by 17.5.
Now that's people that know football. Hallelujah.
I have to say, because I expect Alabama to storm through Colorado State, and if you look at the lineup of games for this upcoming weekend,
it might be the worst ever, Thomas.
There's little and less. I mean, I think it's pretty telling that a Tennessee fan auctioned off a ticket and a date with his daughter, so he didn't have to just burn a ticket that he bought. I think that tells you how sorry the college football slate is.
But he toned it down in the ad by saying my niece, even though they were the same person.
Yeah, the great story. If you haven't read it, I read it and just burst out laughing. But talking about Auburn LSU. I kind of feel like this is going to be the first game where we're going to learn a little more about LSU. First week they played TCU in the Cowboy Classic, but TCU went on to lose this past Thursday to Texas Tech. So I kind of feel like TCU is a little bit of a paper tiger right now, if you excuse me.
Oh, that win has lost some luster.
Yeah.
But, Thomas, you have to admit, and I know it may be begrudgingly, but you have to admit that arguably the most improved quarterback in the entire conference is Mettenberger.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. No, Zach Mettenberger, he leads the conference in pass efficiency. And LSU's offense doesn't look like Les Miles picked it up off the ground, ate it, and then got in touch with his inner natural self or something. It actually looks like a coherent unit. And by the time they get to Alabama, John Chavis will have that defense going. That game gets more and more important, particularly that Alabama has won. But one against A&M, excuse me. Anyway, Mark time is officially done. Our good friend Drew DeArmond is on, and I have made him live. Drew, thank you so much for joining us this evening on Bams Radio. How you doing?
Good, guys. Great to see y'all. It took a couple days to recover from that last one. Kerry will remember this well, but I haven't been that drained after a Bama game since probably the 94 Georgia game in Bryant-Denny Stadium. But, that was quite
an experience. Oh, I remember that. I drove over from Atlanta for that one. I'll never forget that game.
29-28. It was quite a ball game. We could not stop Eric Dyer, and probably would not have if a tight end hadn't dropped the ball late in the fourth quarter on a third down play. So we were very fortunate to escape and just that night, and we were very fortunate Saturday, but we'll take it. A win is a win.
Exactly. That game that you're talking about was not Ray Goff's finest hour, although it was not his fault that tight end dropped that pass. But I say that to say this, Drew. Ray Goff was chewing the cud on the SEC sidelines long before Les Miles was chewing it.
He was, and here's another trivia or question or nice observation. Tyree Malone caught a long touchdown pass in that ball game, and the two safeties back in coverage were Will Muschamp and Kirby Smart. So, very, very interesting.
I think Kirby might have been redshirting that year. At least that's how he tells it.
Will was on the field for that play, I believe. I think they both were.
Will was.
Speaking
of Will Muschamp, you think he might be getting a call from DeLoss Dodds pretty soon?
It can happen, Kerry, but I don't know about him leaving Florida for Texas. Texas has a lot of issues, and they have a lot of money. No doubt about that. But, I've been hearing from my partner Redfish that he thinks Texas is going to make a run at Chris Peterson, which would be very interesting.
I was going to ask you about that. That would make a lot of sense. I think this is the year that Peterson is finally ready to listen.
Well, maybe. And because of his West Coast ties, I would have thought USC as well. But USC is kind of a funny job. They like to kind of hire USC guys or West Coast guys. He may not. He has a Scientology background. I don't know how that would mesh. His style of football would. But of course, even SC doesn't have the resources Texas does. And Peterson, I agree, he could definitely be ready to listen to something like that. Charlie Strong will also probably be on their list as well, especially Texas.
Oh, yeah, he should be. Yeah, he should be. And speaking of resources, this is my night to be the Sultan of Segway. speaking of resources, please mute your mic. People actually know football are talking right now. But, Drew, what I wanted to ask you, because speaking of resources, I heard last night, sorry I didn't get to see you last night. I guess you had to work, but I did come up there for the North Alabama Bama fan meeting at the Greenbrier, and something came up on a question. And I guess I was supposed to already be aware of this, but I'm not, so I'm going to let you – and I'm not really trying to put you on the spot because I'm pretty sure you already know about this. But apparently CBS Sports or CBSSports.com is apparently working on some kind of expose about Ole Miss recruiting. Are you familiar with this?
I've heard some rumblings about a story coming out about Ole Miss, Kerry. I did not know it was CBS, but I have heard in the last 3 weeks that the NCAA wants to talk to Ole Miss, and there are some definite issues there that are wanting to be looked at. I think it centers around two people that are not going to shock you, Laramie Tunsil and Antonio Connor, especially Tunsil. I think there are some shenanigans that went on. You know, you're going to have to find the proof. But it's not every day, and no disrespect to Ole Miss, that the best left tackle in the country with offers from all over the United States ends up going to a school that's coming off a 7-6 record.
Right, exactly. It's really gotten worse the last couple of years than maybe it ever has been over there. And we're all familiar with the stories about Batesville and how you can't get a kid from Batesville to come anywhere but Ole Miss and the tire man and all that. But this is supposedly, this story by CBS Sports, supposedly they've gotten anywhere from 4 to 6 former Ole Miss players to actually go on the record. So this could be and they're holding it till the best possible scenario. Like maybe if Alabama beats Ole Miss and knocks them from the ranks of undefeated, it might come out that following Monday. But I think that there's reason for the folks in Oxford to finally be worried.
I think so. I mean, Laquan Treadwell, I think there were some things. I know they signed his teammate, but he's one of the top three receivers in America from Chicago, Illinois. You know, they came into Alabama. They got Austin Golson, even though Auburn was having their own issues, and Alabama passed on the young man. But they got a lot of great players, Kerry. And, you know, with Hugh Freeze only being in his first year as coach and only having really a 500 season, you kind of had to raise some questions. I mean, Antonio Connor's a Batesville kid, but a lot of these other guys. And then, of course, the Chris Jones situation. They've already been talking to him. There was a lot of speculation about what Ole Miss may or may not have offered him to try to entice him to decommit from Mississippi State, and he did not. He ended up signing with the Bulldogs, but that could come back to haunt Ole Miss as well. And again, but the biggest one was Laramie Tunsil. I mean, I felt like he was going to go to Georgia or Alabama, most likely Georgia, and then at the last minute he takes a visit to Ole Miss and then turns that way. And then they signed Robert Kimdichie. Of course, they signed his brother Denzel. That had a lot to do with it. But again, when you sign high-profile guys like this, especially out-of-state kids that you're not known for getting, you can have a spotlight on you, and they may find some, you know, cockroaches running around, so to speak. So if I were Ole Miss, I would be nervous.
Right. And that's here's another segue. You don't often see a guy that's committed to Ole Miss flip to Alabama, but I'm told that the momentum is growing daily for that to actually happen with C.J. Hampton, Drew.
Yeah, I'm hearing the same thing, Kerry. I think Alabama's put themselves in real good position with him and his family. You know, I tweeted that I had heard a couple of weeks ago that Hampton was becoming a lean to Alabama. It would be only a matter of time before he decommitted and from the Ole Miss Rebels and flipped to Alabama. He retweeted it himself, C.J. Hampton, who follows me on Twitter, within 15 minutes. So I do think there's something to that. I think he understands the opportunity he would have at Alabama. I don't think Alabama's recruiting a ton of kids in Mississippi, but I think he is one young man that they put themselves in position for. And though I still think it's unlikely he signs with Alabama, here I'm starting to hear within the last two or three days that Hootie Jones is really starting to listen to Cam Robinson. So we will see. That will probably be like a roller coaster.
Yeah, I was telling the guys before you called in that the consensus last night at the meeting was that the two toughest positions to figure out in this recruiting class for Alabama are safety and offensive line. It seems like once you think you've got it all figured out, something else happens. And you know, I'm probably more confused ever now about Ronnie Clark, but I keep hearing good things about him in Alabama.
Well, as of last night, Kerry, I'm hearing Ronnie Clark to Bama still. I know that he went to Auburn this past weekend, and I know they haven't set an official date. But with everything, with his, you know, his father's relationship with Cam Robinson, with I think Clark being a in-state kid and a priority, I've got to believe Ronnie Clark is Alabama's. You know, until I hear otherwise, and from my sources, I haven't heard that. And the interesting thing is, the one in-state kid that you're hearing more and more about flipping maybe to Auburn is Steven Roberts, and he's a corner.
Yeah, that's
been
out.
Promoted
that's
like
out
a
there.
High school. It's he's been going. He's been to all three Auburn home games. He's from very, you know, in the he's a stone's throw from Auburn University. So that could happen. But if it does, Kerry, as of last night, I've heard that Alabama could very well be in the lead for Jalen Tabor. If you get Jalen Tabor, that may mean that Steven Roberts is going to flip because, as you said, the spots are so tight. I also heard, as of last week, it may have changed to this point, but that Davion Hall cannot commit at this point right now, even if he wanted to flip. And obviously he had a great official visit to Texas A&M. So the spots are so tight because ultimately I think Alabama likes Davion Hall at safety. And as you said, there's a lot of safeties they're recruiting. But I do think the two priority guys are C.J. Hampton and Hootie Jones.
Right, and I think they've already told Ronnie Clark, I can't prove this, obviously this is speculation, I think they've already told him that they'll take his commitment, but that if they get Hampton and Hootie both, that it may be that Ronnie needs to look at outside linebacker, which I think he's willing to do.
Well, I think ultimately he will end up as an outside linebacker, and I think he's comfortable with that, Kerry, because as you saw Saturday, Alabama is going to have to start recruiting guys, and it's so sad with his situation and what happened to his career at Alabama, but like Tyler Hayes, a guy that can cover and hit, and like our guy Keith Holcomb, who I heard what was said about Holcomb last night, and I totally agree with it. He's a guy that I think they can bulk up, and he can become a very, very good coverage linebacker that can help against these spread offenses. But I will say, everybody's talking about the 42 points and all that, but we said it last week on this show, Johnny Manziel is special. I've got issues with the way he plays as far as cocky and all that, but you have to respect his ability, and you have to respect Mike Evans. I mean, right now I think Alabama has definite issues at cornerback and man coverage. They're struggling. That's why you've seen the shakeup in practice. But I'm telling you, Johnny Manziel is special, and Evans is a first-rounder. So you don't want to throw the baby with the bathwater out the window just yet. Coach Saban and the coaches are going to make some adjustments, and we'll get better defensively.
Yeah, we're fine.
True. Yeah, They didn't play the technique they were taught to play on some of those plays as far as throwing their hands up, you know, reading the receiver's eyes, and Saban has been on them all week about that. So I think that part of their game will actually get better.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, they're diamonds in the rough, and what we're seeing is facets put on the diamond. So that's cool. Drew from the chat room, we've got Sunbelt Tents wants to know about Elam, and he's asked twice, so there you go.
Well, Elam, to me, he is the biggest priority guy besides Marlon Humphrey left on the board. As you saw Saturday, guys, you know, when we played Ivory and Lake at the nose position, both of them are nice players, but they're not dominant. You know, they're not guys that you think almost always will demand a double team and help free up the linebackers with what we do defensively. And Matt Elam, from what I've been told by a staff member his lead recruiter, is a freak. I mean, he's a guy that went to Alabama's elite camp. They liked him, but then this is when they fell in love with him and when he exploded. I mean, he measured 6'6", 360 pounds. He verticaled 32 inches, and he ran a 4.940. And, I mean, that's just amazing for a kid that size. Now, granted, the state of Kentucky high school football is not great, but he tested off the charts, and he really couldn't be handled one-on-one at Alabama's elite camp. So that's where he kind of skyrocketed up the chart. And I still think it's Alabama or Kentucky, but I'm hearing Alabama's in good shape. And with every game Kentucky loses, and sorry for the UK nation, there's going to be more, that I think Alabama's in good shape for Matt Elam, and he's an extreme priority to this class.
Well, we're also trying to figure out, you know, exactly what's going on with the offensive line. I was able to see Jordan Sims play on a bad ankle, but still play this past Friday against Briarwood Christian. Jordan just turned 17, big 6'4", 340-pound offensive lineman at Homewood High here in Birmingham area. The guy's a solid offensive guard, but does not have a committable Alabama offer. I guess the question is there a chance that he could get a gray shirt offer?
I don't think so at this point, Kerry. From what I understand, his top two, he's going to announce shortly thereafter, within a couple of weeks, from what I hear, and it's going to be either Florida or Auburn. My gut tells me Auburn because they need offensive linemen so badly. He could play quickly there. I know Ole Miss is involved as well, but I do think it'll be Florida or Auburn with Jordan Sims. I don't. You know, and then a guy we haven't talked about in a couple weeks that, you know, I still think with the offensive line, Damian Mama is a guy that they will take. And he's going to come visit officially for LSU. He's a guy that is definitely high up the board and has been. He's a right tackle, really, for them. And we need another offensive tackle. And then don't forget about Marcellus Jones from Cleveland, Ohio, 6'5", 305. He's another guy that, he's committed to Ohio State, but he's also coming for his official during the LSU game. And I just think ultimately, and we've talked about this, and, you know, there's been some recruiting war rooms out today that wouldn't name names, but, I would go ahead and name them. There's very, very likely to be two academic casualties out of this class in both Scarborough and Chris Williams, the safety from Georgia. And so you're going to have guys, and even, you know, if Stephen Roberts flips. So there's going to be some spots open up. And some guys that Alabama will be able to take that right now could be committed to other schools, such as Marcellus Jones.
I'm even hearing there might even be an academic issue now with Dominic Jackson.
Well, I mean, there could be. I have not heard that. I do know that there was no hope or no – he had no – there was going to be no possible way for him to academically graduate early and come into the spring practice. But I will say, Kerry, and you probably know this yourself, I was told today that that Alabama's grades, as far as with the guys that they're recruiting, everything will be reviewed in October to see where everybody is academically. And if there's issues, then changes will be made. And I think that could be when you see Bo Scarborough and Chris Williams, things happen like that. But, again, I have not heard that with Dominic Jackson, but I do know when he was being recruited that the word was he would not be able to academically enroll early in January and would have to be a May graduate. So there could be something to that. We will see, but I have not heard that.
Well, I'm not saying that there are problems. I'm just saying that he's going to have to stay on track just to get there next summer. He can't falter at all.
Right. He has no room for error. And I had pretty much – that's basically what I had heard, that he had no – that there was no possible way he could graduate early. And that of course, he had academic deficiencies coming out of high school. So it's one of those things where you have to keep your nose to the grindstone. And hopefully he will be able to do that and have spot in the class, because he's an impressive physical specimen. But it's going to be interesting to see, as you said, what happens with the O-line. I just really think Damian Mama is one to watch, especially with the way Lane Kiffin is probably going to be on his way out at Southern Cal, and then they're going to have some instability as far as who are they going to hire. So it should be interesting to see.
Some people are concerned that if, let's say, Damian Mama picks a West Coast school, that he might even be able to take Talamaivo with him.
Well, yeah, and I've heard the same thing, and that could happen. But I think the official visit, when you finally get him on campus for the LSU game, is going to be huge, Gary. And the environment, you know, Alabama's facilities. I know when Dominic Jackson came down in August, it blew his mind, and he pretty much had no qualms about visiting other schools after that. And I think with Devane, I think there's a good chance that could happen. He will be blown away when he comes on the visit. And then hopefully Damian Mama will as well. Now, it's going to be interesting safety-wise. We didn't really talk about him, but you still hear the name Juju Smith from Long Beach Poly, and he's supposed to come on that same week as well. And it's going to be interesting with the way the board is just – there's the spots are so tight, if he even would have a committable offer at that point. So I tried to give 6, 7, 8 guys today as who I thought would end the class, and that's not easy because there's a lot of really good players out there, and I think there's a lot of guys that Alabama could definitely use, especially in the secondary and especially along the offensive line.
I probably ask you this every single week, but I'll ask you again tonight. Deshaun Hand or Lorenzo Carter?
I like Hand. I've always liked Hand. I think Carter is more of a developmental guy. But right, as of right now, I don't like the fact that Hand, I know, is to take the ACT, SAT, changed his visit date. He changed it from LSU to Tennessee. Now Florida will get the final visit. There is one positive to the Tennessee deal, if him coming to the Tennessee weekend, because hopefully he will be the only official visitor that weekend and will get the absolute red carpet treatment and get shown the town and everything. And Alabama can put themselves in favorable position, make an excellent academic presentation, because Michigan did that. Michigan seems to be leading from all what everybody's saying right now. But, you know, Lorenzo Carter, the one advantage is Alabama has done well with Darius Hanks and Alvin Kamara from that school. So hopefully they can get him on an official and kind of turn his head. But I do think they need one of the two, and either Hand or Carter, as a Jack linebacker, because obviously, you know, I thought that Denzel DeVal and Ryan Anderson played pretty well on Saturday, but you need to continue to add pass rushers. And it's just really disheartening that Dalvin Tomlinson, you know, tore his ACL. I know he's a defensive end, but they could have really used his pass rush Saturday. But on a brighter note, I think we'll all agree A'shaun Robinson is going to be a man if he stays healthy.
I understand we have a caller on hold, Drew. I believe he's got a question for you. Let's go ahead and bring on Jimmy from Andalusia.
Hey, how y'all doing, Kerry? Drew?
Good, Jimmy. Good, how are you? Man. What's your question?
Jimmy, you still there?
He just dropped. I think his phone cut out. Sorry.
Okay.
Did
he say what he was going to ask, or do we know?
He did not. I told him I'd get him on with you two ASAP, and as he's about to ask his question, his phone cut out.
Well, hopefully he'll call back. Go ahead and remind everybody the number, because Drew, I'm sure, is happy to take calls, so go ahead and give everybody the number, Thomas.
Absolutely. To get in on the conversation, the number is 714-510-3707. And if you don't want to call in and you want to ask a question through the chat room, I know Bama Bird is there frantically typing away. So there are a bunch of different ways to get in touch with us, so we'd love to hear from you.
I tell
Gary,
you,
all you, buddy.
Is Legend no longer with us tonight? Did he skip after 1 hour?
No, he's here.
Legend. Pipe up.
Yeah, buddy, go ahead.
You got a question for Drew?
Yeah, I'd like to ask Drew about the national rankings, where Alabama is at the moment, and some of the other SEC teams at the moment, where they're lining up as far as the top 10 in recruiting at the moment.
Well, you know, it's so subjective. It changes per every minute. Alabama has done it well, once they got Cameron Robinson. With most everybody had him ranked in the top, you know, in the top spot in the country, because he was with a lot of the services, if not the number one player, then he was in the top three. And when you get a guy like that, a franchise left tackle, a lot of times that will boost your rank. And right now in the 24/7 rankings, they are still number one, followed by Ohio State. Now, here's a good thing for the Vols: Tennessee is third right now, and Georgia is fourth. Georgia's had a very good start as well. But the one that surprised me that's kind of slipped back a little bit, Kentucky had been in the top, you know, five for a while, but they've kind of slid back in the rankings. But as far as in the top 10, you've got Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, in some order with the services. And Texas A&M is also 10th and 24/7 right now. And we'll move up because I think they were involved with a lot of great players. They had a great, you know, official visit weekend and unofficial weekend for the Alabama game. Even though they lost that football game, it was an epic game, so it shouldn't hurt their recruiting at all. But Alabama right now, excuse me,
go
I was going to say, but watch this. They're not in the top 10 24/7, but LSU will be coming fast because the state of Louisiana is loaded.
What's the state of Alabama look like this year compared to some of the other southern states?
I think it's okay. I think it's a pretty good year for Alabama. I don't think it's a great year. It's not a 2008 kind of year where you had Julio Jones and Marcell Dareus and all those guys of that ilk. I do think it's going to be it did hurt in a way, Bo Scarborough leaving for Florida, because you lose him from the state rankings. But I do think that the state of Alabama, still per capita legend, is going to hold its own. I do think a guy like Keith Holcomb will end up being in the final rankings, in my opinion, a high four-star linebacker and a top 60 national recruit when it's over with. He should move way up in the rankings. And I just think ultimately that it's just going to depend a lot on how some of these kids finish up. And I think Steven Roberts is a kid that's should be a top 70 guy. Now, he's still committed to Alabama. Will he flip to Auburn? Nobody really knows. And when Alabama, in my opinion, gets the commitment of Marlon Humphrey is a top 10 national player, and in my opinion, should be the slam dunk, you know, top corner in America, and is the number one player in the state of Alabama just simply because of his skill level. And I think, especially after what you watched on Saturday, with some of the young players, Marlon will come in at an advanced level. I think he will play a lot as a true freshman, and that's saying a lot when you're talking about Nick Saban's defense.
A lot of people talked about Mack Brown and how far Texas has slipped. Have you seen A&M taking advantage of this situation with Mack Brown's demise?
No question, Legend. No question. Just like I know there's a lot of, you know, kind of controversy about Ricky Seals-Jones, but he's at A&M right now, and he was committed to Texas. They flipped him. They're controlling the state of Texas right now, which is the reason, in my opinion, Mack will not be there next year, because A&M has moved to the, as you have said many times, the Mack Daddy League. They've moved to the SEC, and now they can sell that to recruits, You're on national television on CBS. You play against Alabama. You play against Georgia, maybe not on every year basis, but you play against Florida. You compete against the best in the country, and they can sell that now. In Texas, the Big 12 is just not a very good league. No matter what Bob Stoops tries to tell you, it's not a good conference, and it's not a good selling point for the University of Texas right now because they're soft and they just don't play hard-nosed physical football. Now, Texas A&M's got issues defensively, but Johnny Football and Mike Evans and those guys, they're going to be tough to stop the whole year. And if they have another, and they should have another double-digit win season, and with all the improvements they've done to their facilities and with Kevin Sumlin there, Sumlin will be mentioned on the list for other jobs, but I don't expect him to take another college job. I'll say that because A&M is flush with money, and I think A&M is definitely a comer. And it's not taking them very long the best move they ever made was the SEC, and they're on the cusp of being a consistent top 15 program, maybe even top 10 nationally every year, especially with the high school town in Texas. I mean, there's just tons.
I know we don't talk about them a lot on BAM's radio because we are Alabama all the time, but what effect is Malzahn having down at Auburn, and what's he looking like for the future?
Well, he's in a tough spot, Legend. I think he's done a good job fixing their program in a way. They've now gotten to the point offensively where they've got something to hang their hat on. They've got a triple-headed rushing attack. Trey Mason's a pretty good back. They found the Corey Grant role as far as he's taken over for Ontario McCaleb. And then they've got Cameron Artis Payne. They can at least run the football. I do not like the passing attack. I don't think Nick Marshall's a big-time quarterback. But the issue for Auburn, Legend, they're going to get some good football players because Alabama is being very selective in recruiting nationally. The issue for Auburn is you've got in your division, you've got Alabama, Texas A&M, LSU, and even Ole Miss with the level they're recruiting at right now, investigation or not. Ole Miss is more talented than Auburn. So that leaves you, you're battling Arkansas and as far as to the bottom of the division. That's the problem. I think they're at a talent deficit. I think a lot of their recruiting was overhyped under Trooper Taylor and those guys and wasn't developed properly. And to me, Gus Malzahn has a very, very tough task and getting Auburn back in the top three or four in the Western Division. I think he's going to do a solid job, but is Auburn going to be satisfied with going 8-4? They haven't before.
Let me jump in real quick, guys. From the chat room, RTR1, Drew, do you think there will be any changes in the defensive lineup by the end of the season?
For Alabama, absolutely. I mean, the development of Eddie Jackson and – yeah. The development for Eddie Jackson and Maurice Smith is crucial. I mean, we saw how Geno Smith kind of was the last piece last year. Right now, to say he's in the doghouse would be the biggest understatement in the United States. He's dug himself a hole. He's going to have to dig out. He didn't play much Saturday until the second half, and that wasn't a lot. So Eddie Jackson and Maurice Smith are two to watch. They're very, very good athletes, but they both need to catch on to the scheme. But yeah, absolutely, from the especially at corner, you're going to see a lot of guys mixed in. I do think, and Kerry brought this up, for the season, it's going to be interesting to see if Reuben Foster's role grows because Trey Dupree struggled Saturday. It was kind of like a fish out of water. I do think Reuben's got more talent and more range, but the whole deal is he's got to understand the defense and got to get his assignments down. But I do think that Reuben Foster will also play more and more. And that's going to be interesting because in C.J. Mosley, he's irreplaceable. He was solid Saturday, made a lot of plays, made a lot of tackles. And I do think a guy we just mentioned, I do think A'shaun Robinson will play more and more as the season goes on because he was really impressive on Saturday and he was able to sack Johnny Manziel, which nobody else was.
Second question from RTR1, and this is going to be for both Drew and for Kerry. This is really a pretty good question. I've never considered this, but question number two, Saban wouldn't have an issue with Marlon being on the track team, would he?
No, that's already been worked out. He will run track, and Kerry can probably also talk about that.
Well, he will, and, the only reason that Marlin is considering Florida State is because they have a pretty good track program. That being said, that's all been ironed out with Saban and Alabama. The last thing Nick Saban wants to do is to cost a kid the chance to be on the U.S. Olympic team, and those discussions have already happened. And if Marlin wants to run back at Alabama, he has the green light to do that.
Well, that was interesting.
I think Kerry's actually lagging a little bit now that I've heard it, but I think we might need to work on that after the show, and I can actually jump in on the Marlon Humphrey thing. If you want to see a very astoundingly good track athlete, watch some of the indoor track videos that have come up on YouTube on this kid. He can flat out fly.
Yes, he really can. Marlon is an all-around freak athlete. He's the best young corner I've ever seen. I know that's kind of hyperbolic, but it's the truth. I mean, I want to see him play this season live, but I don't know if I'll get the opportunity. But, you know, Marlon Humphrey is just special. I mean, he's got to be, to me, there can't be another better corner in the country. He's received excellent high school coaching from Josh Niblett and the Hoover coaching staff. And he's a guy that he won't be coming in for spring practice, but he's someone that as soon as he gets there in the summertime, and the thing is, another thing, you know, Kerry, they're not really talking about it, but he can have an impact as a kick returner. He's a heck of a kick returner, especially kickoffs, I believe.
He is. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, now.
Okay. I'm not doing anything different. I think maybe sometimes we our little boards can't handle but X amount of calls. But, yeah, I here's some of the ways. I've been watching Marlon play for 2+ years now, going on 3, and every time I've ever been to a game, he's done something to help Hoover win that game. Now, one game it might be running the kickoff back down to the opponent's 20. One game it might be intercepting a ball or running it down inside the 10. One game it might be returning a punt either for a touchdown or close to a touchdown. One game it might be blocking a punt. There's so many ways Marlon can help you.
We're listening.
Oh, I'm done.
Oh, could you? He's just abruptly was like,
there's a boom. He's done. Hey,
I got another question.
Who are some of the out of state players that Alabama's still in play for right now? Big time players.
Big time. Now, we talked about him already. Matt Elam, nose guard, lives in Kentucky. He's a guy that Alabama wants very, very badly. He's a critical piece to the class. Jalen Tabor from Friendship Academy in Baltimore, Maryland, cornerback, same high school as Eddie Goldman, who's now at FSU. He's a guy that Alabama is also wants very, very much so. Deshaun Hand, Woodbridge, Virginia. He's another out-of-state kid that is very high on Alabama's board. C.J. Hampton from Meridian, Mississippi, the free safety, number one safety on Alabama's board. And then, of course, the number one strong safety, Hootie Jones from Neville High School in Monroe, Louisiana. He's another out-of-state young man who very, very likely would have a spot no matter what. And then depending on the numbers, Davion Hall, Texarkana, Texas. He's another Texas kid that Alabama likes as an athlete, really more as a safety. But as Kerry and I have talked about, you know, the spots are getting so tight. It's just going to depend. And then Raekwon McMillan, Hinesville, Georgia, inside linebacker. Number one inside linebacker on Alabama's board. He's another out-of-state kid, legend that Alabama wants very, very badly.
Who is somebody on this year's recruiting class that's already on the team that probably won't play this year that we can expect to make a big impact for Alabama next year?
I think definitely Grant Hill. He made the travel squad from Huntsville High School. He's a young man I'm very familiar with. I saw just about every high school game he ever played. He's going to redshirt more than likely, legend, if there's no more injuries. And with Cam Robinson enrolling early as a left tackle next year, I think he will be moved inside the guard and could very, very easily replace Anthony Steen at one of the guard spots. He's very, very good. He's as good an offensive lineman as I've seen in 25 years of watching high school football here in the Madison County, Huntsville area. I know it's not a hotbed for football players, but there's been some really good players come out of here, and he's the best offensive lineman that I've seen. I do think Ardarius Stewart from Fultondale, who's redshirting as well as a kid that could make an impact at wide receiver next year. And I know he played just very briefly against Virginia Tech, but Robert Foster is another guy that will be an electric talent to watch. And along with the running backs, and Tyron Jones and Alvin Kamara, both of those guys are redshirting, but they're very, very good players. And I think they could eventually play big roles at Alabama if they're patient. But, of course, right now, a running back is a loaded position at Alabama.
The only name I would add to that would be D-liner.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next one. D-liner will redshirt, it looks like. He's a guy that will be a defensive end, a 3-5 technique guy. Very, very good player. Needs to be motivated sometimes, but if he accepts coaching at Alabama, he could be a very big piece in another year when we lose some defensive linemen to graduation, as it's inevitable with guys like Ed Stinson and of that ilk that are seniors.
A coach that I've always said was overrated and a mistake is Will Muschamp, but he's recruited really well at Florida. What do you see for his future, and where do the Gators lie right now as far as national recruiting for next season?
Florida's, they're doing well, Legend. I mean, you're right. He's recruited very, very well. He's been able to – the one thing he hasn't been able to do is find a quarterback, and I think that's, the one thing. They're not ranked in the top 10 in 24/7 right now, but they'll be – at year's end, Florida will be in the top 10, if not the top 15 easily. Will Muschamp, he's never going to have a hard time recruiting. He just needs to find the right QB, and Jeff Driscoll was highly rated. A lot of people thought he was a five-star guy, but he's just not been developed very well. It's either that or he's going to have to – Brent Pease is going to have to go. He's going to have to find an offensive coordinator because I think, Florida's solid in the special teams. They're really good on defense under Muschamp. The one thing, they're going to have to be a little more disciplined. They gave away the Florida game – or, excuse me, the Georgia game last year, I kind of felt like, with turnovers and lack of discipline. They've already lost their football game to Miami this year where they turned the ball over a bunch of times. But I think the biggest part of that was lack of quarterback play. He's got to find the right quarterback. He's got a kid coming in next fall that's supposed to be a big-time player. It's going to be interesting. If this kid's as good as they think, then maybe. But I just can't see him starting as a true freshman, though. That's kind of a disaster in the SEC. But I do think Muschamp, I still agree with you. I think there's questions. I'm not sure he's a big-time elite head coach, but it's the next year or two is going to be huge. And to be honest with you, Legend, the game Saturday is huge. They've got to beat Tennessee and find a way to score some points because Tennessee is not very good. Everybody saw them get run off the field by Oregon. And the last thing Florida needs to do right now is to drop another game after the Miami fiasco.
Oh, Lord, a loss to Tennessee would be devastating. Yeah, I heard you talk about the Volunteers a little earlier. They've been down for so long, they're just a non-factor now. Do you see this Coach Jones bringing them back to the glory days of the Big Orange?
I'm not sold on him, Legend, because I'm not a big spread proponent. He came from Cincinnati. Before that, he was at Central Michigan. He basically followed Brian Kelly everywhere he went. He took over the programs Kelly coached, and both of them are spread proponent guys. That I don't necessarily think play good enough defense to win big. It's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, Tennessee has still got tremendous issues defensively. I mean, they were up on UT for two. I mean, Oregon for 2 seconds, and then they lose by 50 points. I'm not convinced yet that they're going to be very good. And right now, you've got Georgia. Mark Rick, he's got his detractors, but he's going to always have a lot of talent. Muschamp, if he can find a QB, there's another school ahead of them. And they're even having trouble with Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt blew them out last year, Legend. And right now, I would take Vanderbilt straight up over them. So I'm not sure Tennessee. I still think Tennessee is 2 to 3 years away. And I'm not even sure this guy's the answer. For whatever reason, they can't find the fit that they need. But one of their big problems is, and Kerry's followed this forever, is they have to recruit nationally because high school football in Tennessee, I'm sorry for the listeners if there's any listening, is terrible. And so, they don't have a big-time talent base.
They just don't have any orthodontia up there. They don't have enough teeth, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's
across
just – and
state.
Tennessee right now to me is a mediocre program. And I'm not sure with Texas A&M, you know, ascending, and if Will Muschamp can fix Florida, and then you got Georgia and South Carolina, I'm not sure Tennessee is going to be able in the next few years to get above, you know, six, seven, eight in the league. And that's just my opinion. Kerry may have a different one, but that's my opinion. I think they're right now, at best, an eight-win program.
They're dogfights with Vanderbilt, and that makes me laugh. From the chat room, one last question before we get ready to say sayonara to everybody. Any chance Jacob Coker transfers to Bama, Drew?
Hearing that every day, guys. I haven't been able to get it down rock solid, but he lost the job to Jameis Winston, who was putting up unbelievable numbers. Coker is a guy. He followed A.J. McCarron at St. Paul's High School. He's 6'5", 235. He would have 2 years of eligibility left and be immediately eligible because he's going to graduate in 3 years. I saw the young man play basketball at the North-South All-Star Game his senior year, was very, very impressed with his athleticism and skill level. He has not played a lot of football since that point because he's been behind guys like Christian Ponder and E.J. Manuel, who were first-round draft picks, and now Jameis Winston, who's, you know, the best freshman quarterback in the country right now. So that's going to be interesting, but I think Kerry would agree with me. If this happens, I think you're going to see at least two quarterbacks at Alabama, two young guys, will leave the program because there's just too many right now.
Well, that would be an interesting situation if Jacob did that. I'm told the next great quarterback to come is only going to be in the 11th grade this year, and I'm just hearing so many great things about Ricky Town. And that's not a knock on anybody else that's committed or on campus, but I'm hearing Ricky Town is the next great Alabama quarterback.
We've got one last caller, guys. Let's get our caller on before we have to shake it out of here. So,
sure.
Rock, it's all yours.
All right. Jimmy, I'm glad you called back in. Sorry we lost you a little earlier. What you got for Drew and Kerry?
I was just going to tell y'all, y'all doing a good job on BAMS, and I enjoy it down here. What are y'all, and y'all might have covered it before I got it, but are y'all hearing anything of Rob Ezell coming back to coach wide receivers or anything?
I'm going to speak for myself. I have not heard that. I know he has been at Colorado State coaching for Jim McElwain. I think, you know, Billy Napier right now is a proven guy who's been an offensive coordinator on a big-time level at Clemson. I know people were distraught, you know, with the way the receivers played against Virginia Tech. Obviously, they played much better against Texas A&M. Do I think Rob Ezell could one day come back to the University of Alabama? Absolutely. I think he's a sharp guy. I think he's a guy Saban really liked. He kept him around as a walk-on. But as of right now, I don't. Unless Billy Napier gets offered another job, I see him staying at Alabama at least a couple of years, much like Mike Groh, before he can move up the ladder. But as of right now for Rob Ezell, Kerry, I don't know about you, but I don't see the opening coming up right now unless somebody gets bumped up.
I don't see an opening coming up, but there's always those off-the-field jobs that are still at practice every day that are being groomed to possibly come on
right.
the field as coaches. That's definitely in the realm of possibility. But Rob Ezell is a guy that's he's worth having around because there's not a single person in the whole United States of America that can do a better Nick Saban impersonation than Rob Ezell.
I think he can make a living off
like
that.
Just like Coach Saban, Jimmy. He can his impression his impression of Nick Saban. If you were in the room with your eyes closed, you wouldn't be able to tell which one was which. He can talk just like Saban.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. But I had read that somewhere today. I didn't read that he was coming back to do that. I went back to help do that. Maybe you know. What about Kenny Bell and what's the status on him?
Well, you know, Kenny Bell, he was a little frustrated after the Virginia Tech game. You know, Coach Saban let him take a personal day. He thought it out, made a business decision for himself to come back, was the right decision. As you saw Saturday, Jimmy, he had one touch for 51 yards and a score.
Right.
But
he
made the most out of it. He's going to be about the fourth option for our guys, sometimes the fifth. But with as much talent as Alabama has offensively, he will get touches, And the good thing is he will make big plays. If he had had enough catches last year, he would have led the nation in yards per catch. And I think there's a very good chance this year that could happen again. He won't get as many touches as he probably wants, but he will make the most of them, and he will be a huge vertical big play threat as a screen guy and vertically down the field, as you'll see. And I do think right now they need him because Amari Cooper's got to toughen up. Bluntly, he's not showing enough dog in him. He's got to get going. Right. He's dropping the ball too much, and he's too talented to be producing like he is. He needs to get himself rolling Saturday and get going.
Okay, one more for Legend, if Legend's there.
Legend. I am. Go ahead, my friend. Go ahead, my friend.
Hey, I was listening a couple of weeks ago when I-Man had done got your chair up in there drinking your drink. I want to know what's going on.
Oh, man.
I-Man's been sniffing that bug juice too long. You know, he's a bug man out there in Montgomery. You know, they caught him sniffing his own bug juice, so... I mean, his brain is shot. I mean, I-Man is – the best way to describe I-Man is a dried-up Willie Nelson. That's the best way to describe him. He's a burnt-out wannabe rock star that can't play drums and don't know nothing about sports. But
okay, buddy. Hey, I enjoy what y'all do. I'm just going to give you trouble about that. Y'all have a good night.
Thank you, Jimmy. Me and I-Man's kind of like Ollie and Frazier. We go way back.
You won two out of three.
There you go, bro.
Down goes I-Man.
He needs to stay down, too, when he goes down. I could make a dirty joke there, but I won't. I'll let that slide. I think Bird done pooted again up in the bird cage. It's getting stinky up in here.
And on that note, somebody cue us an outro.
All right, guys, let's take it out of here, and let's get ready for Colorado State. Big Roll Tide to all. Oh, man, a fun show tonight. Rock did a great job. Kerry is always inimitable. The great addition of Drew DeArmond to the team, and then, of course, having Legend in the studio has been a real pleasure. So from BAMS Radio, let's go get some.
Roll Tide, all right,
guys, Roll Tide, and I enjoyed it. And thank you once again. Just to close for myself, if you want to see our work, www.alabamaintel.com, and we are always in chat, and we put stuff on the forums every day. If anybody wants to check us out, free trial, just sign up, and I think you'll be pleased. But thank you guys again for letting me be on the show, and I look for a nice performance and an efficient performance Saturday from Alabama against Colorado State, and hopefully a lot of young guys getting to play.
Thank you, buddy.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Kerry.
Roll Tide, brother.
All righty, guys. I'm going to take us on out of here. Thank you so much to our listeners for joining us, and we'll have our podcast up real soon. Check us out there if you've missed any part of the show. Next week, kicking this around in back chats, we might have one of a special national guests, so keep an eye out for that. We'll be tweeting about it, I'm sure, real soon. Until then, thank you very much again for listening. Same crazy time, same crazy place next week. Everybody have a great weekend and Roll Tide.
I'm going to do the time warp.
Well, you can do that too.